if we don't do it as a team, then we're going to fall apart.
That was the beginning of putting the 2010 team together.
That meant success for Gary Smith.
Found myself inside the six.
If we're creating an 8-1-1, I don't know.
I just whipped it towards the goal. He's going to slide in for sure.
From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and this is the third episode of Memories from Toronto, the story of the 2010 Colorado Rapids. On this episode, we speak to the speedy forward from Jamaica, Omar Cummings. Omar was roommates with Kosuke Kimura and a member of the Colorado Cobras before he broke in with Rapids' first team. From 2008 to 2012, Omar Cummings and Connor Casey were one of the best striker tandems in Major League Soccer. That symbiotic pair went on to help propel the Pids to the championship in 2010. Get ready to learn about his partnership with Colorado's original Connor, spelled with just one N, and how Gary Smith's system and the culture in the locker room helped them have so much success that year. His kids interrupt us on more than one occasion, so apologies for that. Get ready to learn why Omar didn't take a penalty in that second leg at Columbus Crew, and also, we finally get to the bottom of that goal against San Jose in the Eastern Conference Final. Was it his, or was it Kosuke Kimura's? He's got thoughts on that, and much more, starting right now.
Hi, Omar.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for making the time to talk to us. I know these are crazy and interesting times.
That's all right. It's all good.
Yeah. So what exactly does a club ambassador at FC Cincinnati do?
Whatever he wants. I'm just playing, just playing.
That'd be a fun job.
Nobody gets to do whatever they want, right?
No,
it's we do a little bit, a lot of community partners. We work with a lot of schools, a lot of after school programs, YMCAs, stuff like that nature, and whatever else that FC does along the community side, like player meetings or players, whatever like engagement players do. Mm-hmm. We do like a fun learning in school. That's a really, really cool program, which kids in the honor roll, they do a big event every year. So so we follow kids throughout the school year, and kids that are in the honor roll, we have this big celebration where they get the medals and stuff of that nature, big celebration at the end of the year.
That's really cool. How has that been impacted, or how is it different with the pandemic?
Virtual. Everything's virtual. Yeah. Like a bunch of the events that, especially gatherings and celebrations and anything of that nature that we do, canceled. Anything, things that we've done in school, pretty much been canceled. We did start in the summer when things were, when the numbers of COVID were going down. We started up again in the summer, and pretty much outside. And we're doing fine until COVID started ticking up again here in Cincinnati. And being on the conservative side a little bit, you know, shut it down. And then we've gone a little bit more virtual. We've done videos that we send into schools now that, you know, they can work from video-wise with the TE teachers. So it's been an interesting year. And we do what we can. We try to adapt, you know, to your environment.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Is the stadium construction coming along downtown?
That, I think, probably one, I wouldn't say positive of the pandemic, but they've basically not slowed down one bit. I think it may have even helped, where in some instances, especially the traffic around the stadium hasn't been that great.
Mm-hmm.
And around downtown since the pandemic. So I think a lot of the constructions where traffic is concerned, getting stuff in, getting stuff out, have been really smooth. So they've been ticking, man. They've been going well.
So can I have you start by stating your name and your position?
Omar Cummings, former Colorado player, forward.
Okay. What made you decide to come to the United States to pursue college soccer and your education?
That was always on my mind. Really, you know, like what next? What's next? And having whenever like you get the idea of, wow, you know, colleges and stuff like that nature. Once, I don't remember, I think I was maybe 13 or 14 when I started to get a sense of this part of soccer is available, you know, because it wasn't something that was available in Jamaica as far as I know of, right? Mm-hmm. Because really there's only two major universities in Jamaica, so you couldn't really run run a college program, you know, based on that. You have like smaller, like I would say community colleges, but as far as universities goes, there's really only two. So it was always an interest, and luckily for me, one of my coaches that later on in my life that I got to know, not later on in my life, but as maybe 4 years after I got to know, or so 3 years after, he does summer camps in the States every year. And so that was kind of where this process started, where the first coach that recruited me, Mike Combs, never saw me in video, never like came to watch me or anything like that. You know, it was just Bradley was up in Cincinnati doing soccer camps as he usually does every summer. And so he says, hey, Bradley, I'm looking for two players. I want a striker and I want a defender. You know, but based on the respect he had for Bradley and the type of coach you know that Bradley was, he's like, I respect your decision. I respect, you know, how you work and you know players and everything like that. So if you can't recommend a player for me, I'm going to take it that it's going to be a good player. You know, so yeah, that happened. Bradley recommended myself and another player. And unfortunately, the other player didn't work out for the other player. Just because of, you know, immigration stuff and all that other stuff, you have to, the loops you really have to jump through to get to the States. Mm-hmm. So for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And so I made it. And lone soldier at the time coming up for Cincinnati State, Mike Combs did well enough, got right next door, went to the University of Cincinnati. And from then on, I was drafted to Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spoke with Kosuke, your friend, a couple of weeks ago, and he commented on how he was looking at coming to college, obviously, in 2001, right after, you know, the terrorist attack of September 11th. You were a little bit after that. Were things still really crazy with just trying to get a visa?
Exactly. I think that absolutely adds to it, where it was kind of crazy. Everything was scrutinized, you know, every single move you made, everything that you did or didn't do, you know, was why was this not done? So it definitely made it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. How did playing regularly during your rookie year, and then I think there were some reserve league opportunities, how did that help you develop as a player?
I mean, that was great. I always think that was one of the best thing that happened to us as far as the guys that got to experience the reserve league, where if you weren't getting enough playing time in the first team, then you had the reserve league. That was a pretty good competition that happened on a regular basis. You know, it was kind of our USL before the USL, kind of, you know. But you also had good first team players that were playing in that league. So players that were being looked at, players that were coming off injured, players that were just not getting enough playing time in the first team for whatever reason. And so they would come down to play with the reserve team and end up even loving it. We had a great team. We had a strong team. We won the league, I think, 2 years in a row. The year I was my rookie year, we didn't lose a game. You know, we had fun. You know, literally, you'd have players come down to the first team, the second, like the reserve team, not getting enough playing time. I'm like, yeah. And I enjoy my soccer year, you know? Like, the first year, my first year with the Rapids, it was a difficult year. You know, we went three months at one point without getting a win, 3.5 months or something like that, without getting a win. So 10 guys or something like that either were released or traded by July, You know, we had a rookie meeting that year. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but we had a rookie meeting that year, or for young players and for rookies coming in. And we're like, yo, I'm not going to tell any lie. You know, this has been a difficult year. This is from the coach. Like, we need to have a rookie meeting because things are turbulent. And I don't want you guys thinking this is how MLS is, you know? Mm-hmm. This is not the norm. Us not winning for months on end, you know, players moving here and there, players getting traded. It was a very insecure kind of time. You're looking at, as a rookie, like, man, there's no security at all, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't care how well you're doing, how big of a player you are in the team. Seemed like there were no securities at all. You know, you could, this today, you're playing, you're having fun, you think you have a decent spot in the squad, and you're building your family life. You know, kids are going to school, wife is maybe have a job or whatever the case may be. And by the afternoon, you're trading, you're on a flight, you know, heading somewhere else. And for a rookie, that was kind of scary, man. Like, you're looking to build a life and friends. And again, I see you. Players with their wife and kids, you know, kids are going to school, wife has a job, and in front, and you're training in the morning, and in the afternoon you're on a flight, you know. Mm-hmm. that's kind of trippy, you know. That's scary.
You know, that is crazy. This one more thing on the reserve league. You know, I know MLS looks like they're potentially bringing that back based on reports. You know, you played in the USL as it was coming up with FC Cincinnati. Do you think MLS bringing back the reserve league would be a good thing, or how should that go about versus keeping the affiliate, the twos teams in the USL championship?
Great. And if MLS could bring it back, I think it'd be fantastic. I do think it's great for player development. It was just a case of finances why they got rid of it. So for as far as player development, it was fantastic. It was great, you know, and getting regular playing time. And the coaches are just right there that could actually watch a game. You know, right now the process is to loan players out to USL team or whatever the case may be. You know, to see it on video and for the coaches that have time, or maybe you have your assistant coach checking in and watching those games of players, because sometimes you have like, I don't know, five players, six players loaned out, you know, to watch those games, all five, six of those games, plus you're checking in on your games, plus you're checking in on the opponent's games coming up. It's a lot, mm-hmm. you know, but when you have the team right there, you're checking in on guys are training right with you. You can watch the games, you can see away games. It makes a big difference, you know, because TV only shows you so much, you know, so especially you could see a lot of off the ball movement when that player is not on the ball, you know? So I think that's where the benefit comes in. But yeah, if it could be brought back, I think it would add tremendously to player development.
Yeah. Tell me about Connor Casey and the relationship you had with him that started in Colorado.
And that started from the reserve league. As I said, you know, Connor was the guy coming in from Germany, you know, big time player. And, you know, had some injuries. And so as he was coming in, used the reserve league to try and get his fitness, get his momentum up to get playing time in the first team. And so that's where it kind of started, where as he came in, it's like us working as a partnership when he came in. And that led to when Connor was not so much playing in the reserve league as much, then I started getting more minutes in the first team, that relationship continued into the first team. And then eventually I got started more playing time, you know, started. And so that relationship continued.
Mm-hmm. What made you guys so deadly as a tandem?
I think the style of play, where Connor was that, you know, that big figure in the central, you know, great heading. Hi, you know, could take on three, four players, you know. Yeah. And I was the young speedster, you know. And Connor would check, I would check, he would go, you know. And we just work, hey, big guy, how you feeling today? You know, kind of thing. All right, don't worry, we're going to work him, you know. get in there, we're going to get you the ball, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah, and Connor was a great finisher, you know, and eventually, as we worked, we know, okay, how to find each other, you know, and the relationship just builds, man. You know, like, hey, we know exactly what we wanted and needed to do. And if we did it efficient enough, we're going to get results. We're going to get some goals, you know, or put teams under pressure. And I think with that said, the team as a whole had confidence in us to get that goal, you know, and felt like if we keep working, these guys, one of these guys will get us something. And so if we can get that, then we can hold the team off. We can get a result, you know, something can happen.
Yeah, talk to me about Gary Smith's coaching and playing style and how well that worked for you and Connor.
I think Gary, simplicity, really. Gary has, for each player on the field, he will give you a specific job or what you're supposed to do, you know? And if you completed that task, then to a certain degree, then I think... again, we have more times than not. I think we'll get a result, you know? So if he says, all right, Omar, this is what I want from you, right? Then, and if you get, you know, say if you're getting a grade, you know, between A or B or C, if you get within the B plus to A, then I'm sure we'll provide enough opportunities where we can get a goal or two. And so therefore get a result, you know. And then if everyone else is doing their part, their job description, fulfilling their job descriptions to a certain degree, then we have a stunning chance of winning. So I think it was very simplistic in that sense where you know, do this job, this is what I want from you, and this is what I want from the team. And we always had kind of a fallback. I think that really helped us where I felt like if the game is not flowing in the way we want it, then you go back to the basics and you start from there, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think we always had this kind of a fallback plan where everyone, we want to play, we want to get connect passes, we want to open these teams up. But if that's not happening to a certain degree, then we have this kind of fallback plan. Okay, go back to basics and then build out from there.
Mm-hmm. What initiated when you guys went back to that basics? Because at least we haven't spoken to Gary yet, but one thing that I'm kind of interested in, like at times during that final against Dallas, you know, it seemed like Dallas had a lot of the ball and then you guys couldn't get forward. And then similarly, you know, it felt like especially the back line was, you know, on its heels for much of that game against Columbus. So, you know, what initiated the, hey guys, let's go back to basics or let's change something because the game plan isn't working.
Right. And that could be, you know, Captain Pablo did a great job with that, you know, absolutely. Definitely, you know, when you have your halftime talks, then you can always address issues. And I think we always had a kind of a plan for the first 20 minutes of the game. Basically, always kind of started out that way. And sometimes that 20 minutes, you say we're going to go press them for 20 minutes or whatever the case may be. That 20 minutes will end up 35, 40 minutes and you're looking around and you're going, whew. Either that was like, we're still Daddy, kind of playing that momentum, Daddy, that kind of speed.
Daddy.
Yes, come on.
Let's go. I'm on the blower.
All right. Can you do me a favor? Kimani, can you do me a favor?
What?
Could you go upstairs for a minute?
What worked well in the 2009 season? What ultimately had the team kind of fall off that, you know, led to, we're going to make a really big deal about kind of the seminal moment with that last game against RSL.
For that 2010 season?
Yeah, for 2009, in terms of what went well and ultimately what didn't work at the end.
I think the locker room, to be honest. I think our locker room was strong. The guys, you know, were fighting for each other. You know, things just seemed a lot simpler, you know, as I said. There were guys that we would always fight and play hard in practice, but there were no egos. You know, anyone that came in, you kind of like, this is the culture, you know, and there are no egos. There are no superstars. Other teams were getting their superstars and DPs and whatnot, you know, and they're like, we're not that team, you know. So if we don't do it as a team, then we're going to fall apart, right? So it was that sense of community, that sense of blue collarness about the team, you know. And honestly, if I had to say anything, I'd just say the culture in the locker room was what was the glue that held us together.
How big was Jeff Lorenowitz as an addition, both in terms of what he did defensively and then what he did offensively, but also to help free up Pablo to, you know, support you and Connor?
Yeah, Jeff came in as a leader straight away, you know. You know, so if you can have more leaders in and characters in your strong characters in your group, that just adds to it, you know. And so just to solidify that midfield, that belly, you know, of the Rapids, where, you know, winning balls and distributing, providing, you know, obviously Jeff got some goals for us, you know. So, you know, like he had a great strike. So in and around the box, he was dangerous. You know, but it was great just to win those balls higher up the field, get us distribution, and get us on the way as quickly as possible.
The team starts off with a 6-game unbeaten streak to start 2010. Three of those games were 1-0 wins. You and Connor were clicking. What worked so well? Why did you guys get off to such a good start?
It's a sense of this could be our year. I think Connor and I relationship, you know, developed over those years, you know, and so it was kind of like, okay, we're ripe to do something good, something great, you know. And I wouldn't say if it's now or never kind of thing, you know, but we wanted to be our moment, mm-hmm. You know, this could be the year. Let this be the year.
Here's our chance. Yeah, let's take it.
We haven't made it into playoffs. I don't think we made it into playoffs up to that point. And the sense was like, let's get into playoffs and then take it from there. You know, we're not going to say we're going to win it. We're not going to say we don't care what position we got into the league. Of course, you want to be a higher seed, you know, leading into the playoffs. But just like, just give us that chance. Just give ourselves that chance to get there. And then, hey, let's just take it a game at a time. But we had confidence, like, okay, this is our goal. We want to make it. Let's push for it and let's go, you know. So I think everyone kind of had that sense of kind of not like everyone wants to make the playoffs, right? Every team has it to make the playoffs. Every team has it to want to win the season. But from time to time, realistically, it doesn't look the same, right? And I think that year, if you see the pieces that we had, it looks like, okay, you know, we could definitely make this. We had Connor and I that for the last couple of seasons were doing pretty well offensively in the league. Marvin Wynn came in, Drew came in, you know, Jeff Lewinowitz, Pablo. So other guys, you know, but these in each position, you had Pickens, you know, were getting looks from the national team. So yeah, in each position, really, you had guys that were pretty good in their game. So, you know, I was playing for national team. Connor was playing for national team. Pablo was there. You know, Marvin Wynn was getting called in. Kosuke was even getting looked at for a national team. You know, you had Wally B, you know, was, you know, has been in the youth national team system. And, you know, it just, and, you know, so it definitely clicked. Jeremy Smith has been, you know, with the Irish national team. So you definitely had guys all around the pitch that were getting, you know, just good quality, you know, all around. And you felt like probably majority of us would start in majority of MLS teams around the league at that time. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, you know, that was the great thing and the core where in each position, you had people that were doing pretty well within the league.
Mm-hmm. So, how did Connor not making the World Cup squad impact or change him that season?
For a little bit, I think he was disappointed for sure. You know, he kind of maybe got flustered a little bit, but I think eventually got really, really motivated, you know, to do something great. So, of course, it was a disappointment. And to score the goal to make your country get into the World Cup and not be added to that, like, had to be, like, kind of gut-wrenching, you know? And if I remember correctly, I don't think he heard from the coach. I don't think he got a call.
Yeah, he heard they released the 35-man squad, and that's how he found out. Yeah, exactly. So there was no – and I've spoken with Jeff Plush and Paul Bravo, and they didn't have any communication with the Federation as well. So as far as I know, nobody in the club – the way everyone at the club found out was the Federation doing the press release, no call from Bob or anybody else.
Exactly, exactly. And I think you know, he's a professional. You know, he's a grown man. So I think if you call him up and say, hey, this is the situation, then he would feel, all right, I'm disappointed, but I respect your decision. And we go from here. To not be called up, you know, beforehand, you know, to learn like everybody else, then I think he felt a little bit disrespected.
Mm-hmm. The team has a little bit of a lull after that World Cup period. You guys go winless in the month of July. Was there anything in particular that wasn't clicking or wasn't working or that you guys were struggling with?
If I remember correctly, I think maybe we had some injuries. So, again, things have to get adjusted. You have to adjust your team. Yeah, I couldn't pinpoint it really exactly, but definitely some injuries at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. What boost did the team get when Matt Congee and Brian Mullen were added in September?
Just the experience of Mullen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
it was awesome, man. I think everyone kind of disappointed, you know, at first. I think Colin was a huge part of the team, you know. And but to have a Brian Mullen come in and the respect he has not only and you know, across the league and what he's done, you know, just amazing and so simple, you know. You first day you like the guy off the bat, you know. So easy. Brian is one of my, you know, favorite people to talk to, and just, you know, because he's so simple, so nice, man. You know, it's an amazing character. Kanji was a good asset, you know. Talk about a guy that has confidence, you know, within himself. You know, definitely a good, a different type of player. You know, where Kanji is this tall guy. You don't expect him to have this great feat that he has, but he could glide by you, you know, in no time. You know, and he always has this confidence about him, like, can get me the ball, I can dribble past anyone. And so it was just a different dynamic that we could use, a different weapon, you know, in a different style.
Mm-hmm. Was there any sense of, because, you know, Kanji was often, when he was subbed on, it was on several occasions for you. You know, he was a good foil in terms of what you guys were doing at the striker position. Was there any sense of competition with him or that he was coming in to potentially take your place?
Don't think so. Not for that year, per se. And as I said, you know, I think Connor and I had a great relationship, you know. And but as I told you already, when we had this, okay, the first 2025, we're gonna go hard, you know. And that 2025 turns into 35, 45, 40 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. You look at the clock and like,
because it's working
for 40 minutes, you know. And so, you know, you get burned out. It's very hard to sustain that for the entire game. So to have someone like a Kanji to come on and put that pressure, and again, with his skill set, you know, could take people on and run at defenders during that time frame, it makes for a perfect super sub.
Mm-hmm. There's one episode that we are going to dedicate. So we have an episode specifically for that month of September, the team starting to ramp up for the playoffs, and then the two big trades that you guys had. And we're going to dedicate that episode to Colin. And so I'm wondering if you could share a story about him, you know, either as a man or as a human being.
You know, obviously, difficult time. Remember, it's looking back on my highlights, even I was like, "Oh, you know, Colin and I had some really good link-up play." You know, I don't know, man. I don't think there is enough you can say. You know, I definitely miss him. You know, I think Colin for us kind of led the way for myself and for other guys that came in for rookie year. He was kind of one of the first guys to break through the Cobras, as we called ourselves, you know, into that first team, my first year, my rookie year. And I felt like he kind of led the way for us, and the guy that went first, kind of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we basically were graded on how well Colin did, you know?
Mm-hmm. He was the standard, and you guys had to meet him.
Right. So when they saw Colin and the success that he was having, and, you know, they're like, okay, these crop of guys, they're here, you know, good. You know, like, look how well. And for 07 season, it was kind of that bright spark, you know, to come out of from the Rapids, and the young kid coming through, shining through. So I think he was kind of that beacon, that shining, you know, leading the way for us as young guys looking on to break in to the first team.
Mm-hmm. Did I hear you say Cobras? Was that like a group nickname that you guys had?
That was the group nickname. That was the reserve team nicknames. The Cobras, a.k.a. the Cobras, man. So the official Colin is one of the original Cobras.
Okay, so it was Colin, it was you. Was Kosuke in that group?
Kosuke was everyone from that rookie year and from the previous year. Stephen Keel was there, Jeff, Jacob Peterson, Nick LaBraca. Juice was the goalkeeper. I think even Jose Cancela considered himself a Cobra, because, you know, he was like, man, I love playing with you guys, you know. And okay. Again, it was kind of turbulent in the first team that first year, but as it came down, he's like, dude, I don't even want to go back and play, because the sense of I want to enjoy my soccer. And I think we were a group that enjoyed our soccer, you know. And I don't think the first team ever beat us that year for 2 years. I don't think they ever beat us.
Wow.
You know, just right. To show, like, had some good quality players on that team. So, you know, it was always competition, but I don't think they ever beat us for like our first like 2 years.
Okay, I guess I'll talk to Porrick Smith and see if the reserve league comes back. You know, maybe they'll have to make that team instead of Colorado Rapids Reserve. It'll have to be the Colorado Cobras.
Yeah, the Rapids and yeah, the Cobras, man.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, the first team. So this so it's kind of funny. Like in every team, every year we have a meeting, and it was always unanimous, really. Where other teams do it differently, but we did it where you always, like, every money that comes into the bonus money, that when you win games, championships, whatever the case may be, that comes into the club, it always gets shares evenly. It's one team, right? Other teams do it differently. And I remember this one particular year, even this guy came in, he was on trial, and then everyone was like, across the board, you know, everyone gets equal share. No, I don't think it was. It should be that way. It should be first team. Like, if you start, if you get into the game, you know, if you're in the 18, and then, you know, you get like 3-4 shares, you know. And everyone and looked at this guy like, "What? Who the hell are you?" You know. And again, that's to talk about the culture of the team. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're coming into our locker room telling us how we should do it, and you're on trial, you know? Like literally, like it was a movie, man. Like, everyone kind of looked at this guy like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? You know, but that happens differently everywhere. But again, for going back to rookie year, the first 2 years, where, again, for each win, each of MLS teams gets a certain amount of money for each win. And so for the prize money that year, it was, I think,
$20,000
in the Reserve League. And so literally, the most bonus money everyone got that year was from the Reserve Team. Reserve Team Championship.
All right.
So okay. It was ridiculous. The Reserve Team is kind of like, you know, giving bonus to guys that are not making any money at all, basically, you know, to be like giving bonuses to the first team.
Cobra's making it rain then. Okay. Yeah. So the team's bearing down, starting to get into form for the playoffs, and there's kind of two key games that I remember. October 9th, 2010, you guys get a 2-2 draw at FC Dallas, and then the next week, you guys win at LA Galaxy 3-1. You scored against Galaxy. What do you remember about those two games, and were those seminal moments in terms of we can get results, we can actually make the playoffs and do damage in the playoffs?
As I say, I think we didn't have a great summer, or leading into the summer. We didn't have July, August. We didn't have great. And again, sometimes it's just your team loses steam a little bit, and then for whatever reason, you're not clicking, and you get back to basic, as we said. So I think I was player of the month, I think, in that September, for that September. So I was definitely in form. Team was looking better. We're getting more results leading in to that playoff run. So I think that's a time when we were really kind of clicking, you know, where everything was clicking. Everyone head was geared on. We knew exactly what the target was, you know, and we know we couldn't afford to drop any points, you know, or very little points. So everyone was dialed in. Everyone was dialed in leading into that last couple of months, you know, leading into the playoff months, you know, like October is that critical time, you know? Mm-hmm. So September, you know, August to September, ending into October, you're like, this is the time. This is when you want your team to be playing their best. You know, so I think everyone realized that and like, okay, this is go time, you know, so let's go.
Mm-hmm. That first leg against Columbus, October 28th, Pablo gets the goal in a 1-0 win. What do you remember about that match?
Just the fight, like, and you know, your captain leading the way, you know, and Pablo doesn't get a lot of those, right? You know, so, it's again, every single game is a fight, and just to when we're getting to the Eastern Conference, you know, I think if we looked at it, I think it worked out beneficial for us. The West, I think, was doing pretty well. There were strong teams in the West. Teams were playing great. So when we, in that year, and again, MLS changes like every couple of years.
Yeah.
How the playoff system works, you know, and back then, you know, what was it? Like the first two teams in the Eastern and Western Conference would go, and then the rest of the team were the best points.
Yeah.
Get into the playoffs.
So. Yeah, so Colorado and San Jose were the wild card teams in the Eastern Conference.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. It was a good battle. Good. Honestly, I don't remember too much about that game itself, but I know it was a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second leg, you know, absolutely crazy game. Connor ends up fighting to get that goal. You know, at the end, what do you remember about that game in Columbus?
I think relief. Relief because I remember that one very vividly now, as you said that. So we knew we had the advantage going in. They got it. And we could definitely, even like on what do you call it? Not a Weigel rule, but
aggregate.
Yeah, aggregate. There you go. You know, we could definitely win it. But it's a game of pressure. It's a game that was pretty tight and pretty intense. And to get that goal, and I guess not the goal, but the results, you know, more so, puts the belief in the team. You know, it's like we got the first one in the books, you know, where the goal was to get in the playoffs, first of all. And we said from there, then, you know, anything is possible, right? And to get that win, I think just instill belief, you know, into the squad, right? Because it's Columbus Crew is a pretty good squad, you know, a team that's one of the, you know, the old teams, you know, of the league, you know, and to go there and get the result, you know. And there's arguments, I've talked to different people about, you know, how the playoff system is situated, where you would, if you travel, if you go first away, then because you're the highest seed, they were the highest seed, so they play at home second. You know, and I felt like, you know, playing at home second gives you an advantage, you know, but other people have different ideas about that because they feel like you're flying twice.
Yeah.
Flight might take, you know, just a little bit more out of you than flying once.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Was there a reason that you weren't one of the penalty kick takers?
You know what? I've been a little penalty shy. It's probably something a lot of people don't know about me. Because I never took the penalties in the season. You know,
yeah, it's always Connor. Yeah,
Jamie or someone else taking those. I was gonna be the sixth penalty taker. I was the sixth. I was happy not to take that penalty.
Yeah, especially when Carroll missed it the way he did. Right. How about, I don't know if you remember, so Matt Kanji steps up and he takes it and like barely rolls it past the goalkeeper, not putting a lot of pace on it. You know,
right.
Was he a bad penalty taker in training?
No, I don't think so. As I said, you know, Kanji is one of those guys where he just has so much confidence within himself, you know, with everything he does, you know, so, he would tell you like, yeah, I knew it was going to go in, you know, I'm pretty sure. I think it just, that's his style and like, yeah, this is good enough kind of to be a great penalty. No. But good enough.
Mm-hmm. Eastern Conference Final, November 13th, 2010, against San Jose. Yeah. You win 1-0. I've looked back at the replay of the goal a bunch of times, and I can't tell. Can you confirm, did you get a touch to it, or was that Kosuke's goal?
I would love to even plead the fifth on that one. And if I did, it was the slightest of touches, and that was what I was going for. Honestly, I wasn't trying to redirect it; I was just trying to add to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so definitely got the goalkeeper froze, and that was kind of the idea where just add a little bit more momentum to that one to keep it going. You know.
Mm-hmm.
To keep it going in the same direction, because I felt like it was going on target, you know. So it worked. Yeah,
it did. How important was your relationship with Kosuke? Because obviously he's the right back. You're mostly the right-sided striker with Connor on the left, and then him coming forward and linking up with you. Just talk to me about that relationship tactically and personally.
Tactically, we worked on it. We worked on it. Kosuke and I were roommates. We challenged each other. Down to the very wire, you know. we play off each other. We do 1v1s. You know, he loves doing 1v1s against me. My defensive skills are not as good as his. You know, but yeah, man, we love playing against each other. We love competing against each other. We love, you know, breaking things down. You know, when we play and have a better understanding of what each other is looking for, you know, it was a great relationship, man. Still one of my best friends today. Great guy all around. Personally, again, as roommates, you know, we did everything. We were roommates at home and even roommates on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was great to have that connection. Guys, we moved in. Actually, we wanted to move in straight away when we were rookies, but I didn't sign until later. So by the time you sign, they give you like a week or two to move out of
the hotel
room, you know. So Nick, LaBraca, Kosuke sign, John D sign. So those guys are kind of looking for roommates. I didn't sign until later. So they were like, all right, they will be roommates together, just because the team was basically kicking you out of the hotel, you know. Mm-hmm. So by the time I signed, Buna was looking for a roommate, and so I became Buna Kondul's roommate.
All right, that worked out, yeah. So I spoke with Kosuke, and apparently he was a really big fisher, and he bought a fishing boat, and at one point they were parking it at the stadium. Do you know anything about this? Were you a big fisher with him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. And, yeah, it was awesome, you know, where this guy, out of his mind, just like Kosuke would do these things, you know? Like, I think they sold it. They use it maybe twice. 3 times. We use it until we sold it, like, the next year, you know?
Okay.
But, yeah, it was great. Caught, what did we catch in that thing? Like, a bass, like, it was a huge fish, I think, the first time we went out and used it, you know? Like, oh, we're going to be using this all the time, blah, blah, blah. Use it, like, 3 times. Kosuke being Kosuke. Spent, I don't know how many hours online looking for this thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
And got a great deal and decided, oh, get it, you know, because I think got it for under $600.
Okay.
And you get a boat on the $600, or like, you know, yeah, a boat on the $600. You're like, go for it, right?
Yeah.
I just say, greatest day, two of the greatest days in your life when you buy,
buy the boat when you sell it.
Yeah. So it was great. Yeah, it was great. Definitely. It was intriguing to have that and to keep it and to have guys like, hey, come out, we're going on a boat. And a little bit dangerous, you know, like you're definitely living. It wasn't the biggest thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
So take it out on the lake.
Was it like a pontoon or, you know, was it a rowboat or how many people could fit?
A little propeller.
Motor. Back. Okay.
Definitely propelled it, and it was nice. It was fine. Great.
Okay. I want to go back to the Eastern Conference Final. You know, you guys had so many chances. You hit the crossbar in the 60th minute, set up by Jeff. You know, how frustrating was that? Or, you know, was Evan Bush just on his game that night?
It wasn't the smoothest game. I don't think we played our best game. And to be honest, the last practice was not the best practice that we wanted to have. I again, talking about the competitiveness with Kosuke and I almost didn't play the final because of an ankle injury between Kosuke and myself. You know, again, just each other not giving each other an inch. And I think I either took the ball from Kosuke or the ball was broken up. He was dribbling, and so I got it, and I'm down the line with the ball, and Kosuke, you know, being Kosuke, not wanting to give up, just chased after me and made a tackle, and I twisted my ankle, and so it was kind of a touch and go thing. I had to do like a fitness test that next day before I was cleared to play for the final.
Did that hamper you at all? Was that a factor?
I think so. And I ended up straining my quad later on in the game when I was taken off. And I saw just kind of compensating throughout that game a lot. Probably caused that. As far as in the game itself, I was, once I decided I'm fit enough to play, then that injury couldn't be the cause of me not performing, you know, to my best ability. So once I decided I was going out, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. But what was that?
Again, it was a tight game as finals are, you know, not because finals, I think, and playoff games really just, it's not a regular season game where you feel like it's points, it's do or die, and you go home. And the final is definitely the ultimate do or die game, you know? So it was intense. I keep saying that, but it was, you know, every game is just that much more intensity. And for them to score first, you know, probably added a little bit more pressure to us. You know, I don't think we were flustered at all, to be honest. I think because it's one goal, so we're in the game, and we've been doing this all season. So we knew going into halftime, we have our talk and know that, okay, we know exactly what we need to do, you know, and how much time we have to do it. So it's on us now to go out there, put pressure, and to get a goal within a reasonable time frame to get this game back, you know, on even keels kind of thing, and to give us momentum to finish the game.
Mm-hmm. What was that matchup like playing against your former teammate, Ugo?
Chuku. Ugo Chuku. No, I love playing against Ugo. At the time, you know, we were basically known to be one of the fastest guys. We have Marvel Wing, Ugo, myself, you know, probably in the top five, probably some of the quickest guys in MLS. And so that was always a challenge and always bragging rights when it comes on to playing against one of your good friends and former teammates, you know? So I definitely was that challenge where with other games, you know, speed could be an advantage and still is, depending on what side of the field it's on, you know, but Ugo would basically cancel a lot of that out. You know, if you say, okay, we know this team's a little slower, we can go over the top and have success. Not so much when you're having a Ugo Himelu playing your back line, you mm-hmm. know. So definitely it was like, you have to choose your moments, and when you do those balls in behind and stuff like that, it has to be perfect. You know, if it's not, then it's going to be picked off, or Ugo, you know, with his speed, was going to get it, you know. So, but yeah, you have to like play around them, try to break them down, you know, and use every weapon in our arsenal to try and make that work.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of every weapon, you know, in your arsenal, that ball over the top that, you know, you chase down, and then it goes to Jamie Smith and then into Connor with Benitez there. What do you remember about the goal?
As I said, I think we knew, okay, something needs to happen now, you know, and our team is looking, is going to look more times than not, myself and Connor, to produce those moments, you know, to make things happen. So I felt like this is your time to make something happen, you know. Not having the best game, as I said, you know, yeah, the results, but I don't think it was a smooth game. It's go time, kind of. It's now. Now is the time we have to make something happen. Now we have to put them on the edge, you know, and that focus, you know, like we didn't come this far, you know,
to lose.
to lose. You know, they're not going to win. They're not going to beat us. And I had that in my head, you know, and I've not, to myself, honestly, looking back on my just playing careers and all that, I've really not, in finals, you know what, myself, I have a confidence when it comes down to finals. I have fears about semifinals in my, just me personally, because I don't know what it is, but I wasn't, once we got into final, I had a confidence we were going to win. I had a confidence we were going to win, you know? So it's all about, again, doing what we know we can do and getting back to the simplicity and the things that got us into the final, you know, throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that Connor and I are two of the most dynamic players in MLS for that season, you know, if we do what we're supposed to and connect in the way we can connect, we're going to get results, you know? And that belief, like, if we get in those positions, Connor was playing some of the, you know, scoring goals. So if we keep doing and I could get in the positions I need to get in and get by defenders and to get ourselves into those positions to score, we're going to get one. You know, so just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. And I saw that ball and I saw that opportunity, like, this could be one of those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Were there any other chances that stuck out for you? You know, you had a header chance in the 30th minute.
And yeah, I had a header chance, and I kind of like shake my head. I still remember those moments sometimes, man. And you're like, that header, I definitely should have had that one.
Daddy,
you know?
Daddy,
I'm very disappointed. That's probably Daddy, one of the best. Yes,
Daddy. Do you have something in your pocket that can make this into a toy?
If I have something in my pocket to make this into a toy, I don't know.
I don't know what you have either.
Come here. What? Come here. Come and say hello.
Okay.
Show him his pajamas.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, there you go. The toy.
Hello. All
right, say hi, Matt. Hi, Colorado.
Hi, Colorado.
Colorado Rapids, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other plays from that final that stick out for you at all?
The goal that they scored, I mean, decent goal, but I felt like definitely didn't do our best on that play. Kind of just weaved through and it's like, oh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kanji's goal, you know, it would live with us for forever.
Yeah. Are you...
The goal by the way it was scored, you know, and the injury that he suffered as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
As a player, as a striker, you know, I look at myself like, hey, that could have been me right there, you know, as Kanji came in for me, you know, but as a player, you never want to see those, you know, never. So. As far as anything else,
the only other one I had in my notes was the 27th minute where Casey and Benitez go down in the box and there was maybe a chance for a PK there.
Yeah, but...
Do you have an opinion on that play?
I could say definitely possibility, you know, but once it's not called, then you it's play on, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About and not gonna let it brew.
Yeah, know? No VAR in those days.
Yeah.
Are you I know some guys are super relaxed on the bench, some are super nervous because they're not playing and so they can't help. You know, after you're subbed off and it's still extra time and, you know, the teams are playing for it, you know, you could score, if you go to penalties, you wouldn't be involved in that. You know, were you a nervous guy on the sideline?
Not so much. A little bit, yeah, of course, you know, but I felt like I did what I could, you know, and again, to have Kanji as a replacement going in, and I knew what Kanji could do, and I felt like at this time in the game, Kanji taking on defenders that have played for 100 and something minutes now, you know, and
good thing.
And probably saw that one could probably potentially happen. You know, as you said, as the season went on, Kanji was subbing in for me more times than not, you know. So definitely, I was more excited than anything else. I think to have Kanji come on. Yeah, do I want to be on the field? Sure. But to have Kanji go in facing defenders that have been running around for 100 and odd minutes, I'll take that. You know, I'll take that one for sure.
Mm-hmm. What were your emotions when Toledo blows for the full time?
And it was just euphoria, you know? Like, just all the work you did all years, you know, building on that moment, adding pieces in that moment, and to see it all come together, your families, you know, there. And when I signed for the Rapids, Charlie Wright asked me, so are you excited and what are you going to do for the Rapids? And I'm saying I'm going to score goals and win championships, you know. And at that point, I felt like I did what I set out to do at the Rapids, you know. So first person I went to was Kanji. Was on the bench. Second person I went to was Hugo. Again, because this was not something that was just in that moment, just for that year, but was building for years. We were building for years. And so Hugo was a big part of that. You know, and we're very good, and we're still very good friends, as I said. You know, so definitely just to say, man, you know, I wish you were on this side. You know, it wasn't, you know, we built something together, and hey, somebody had to win, you know, and unfortunately not on this side, but know that you were a huge part of this. So, you know, take it in a strange way, you helped us get here. You know, we beat you, but you helped us get here in some strange way. So, you know, then from then on, it was a party, man. It was a party with everyone else, you know. So, yeah. Kosuke, Gary, all those guys, you know, yeah. Every Connor, you know, everybody. So, and it was fans, man. It was awesome. It was great.
You go on the trial to, you know, keep yourself fit and play at a high level against quality players with Aston Villa during that winter. And I know there are a bunch of rumors about, you know, potential interest from you. You know, was there any significant interest? Were you interested at all leaving, or at that point, were you happy staying in Colorado?
I was happy in Colorado. I was definitely happy in Colorado. And I had the mindset of it will come. Like, if you do what you're supposed to do in Colorado, you can't have the mindset of, like, I want to be here, and your focus gets thrown off. You know? So my focus was in Colorado. I think, you know, things could have happened differently, for sure. And if the opportunity presented itself where I could go, yeah, I think I would relish that opportunity, you know. And but everything I would have gotten would have been because of Colorado, you know.
What didn't work in 2011, or what went wrong to where you guys weren't able to repeat what you did in 2010?
We had a lot of injuries within that year. It was just like we didn't get into the flow. I got my ankle injury early on in the season, and that bothered me for the rest of the year. I never quite recovered at all. Jamie was injured, Connor was injured, you know. And then you had different pieces that were moving in and out of the locker room, and so that has a different dynamic, you know, adds a different dynamic to the locker room. But overall, I would say definitely injuries, and we weren't at our peak leading into the playoffs. And for me, that was it. And frankly, it was the amount of injuries that we had. It was just the strength of the team that really allowed us to get into the playoffs, you know? So it was just unfortunate that we couldn't. Like, mind you, I was out for maybe 10 weeks or so, and just never felt better that entire year at all. You know, my leg was never better, you know. So
Do you feel that the team, you know, had you know, Gary stayed with the team for 2012, that you guys could have, you know, had another go at it?
I definitely think we could have. And there was no reason why we shouldn't. And whenever a coach comes in, it's a different culture. And to be frank, when he came in, new coach came in, he came in and was like, this is a winning team. We won a league a year ago, basically, you know. So this is a winning team. But we went away, I think, from, again, the culture of team. The culture just got broken, you know. Instead of, again, if we lose and win, like, it was as a team. And I felt like earlier on that season, the culture became, if we didn't get a result, if a goal was scored, then it was your fault why we didn't score, you know? And we got into this whole thing about, like, after about a couple of games in, man, it's just like the culture of everyone kind of blaming, looking to blame. It was shouting. It was like so much noise, you know? I felt like in the field, and especially on set pieces, where we're getting killed on set pieces, you know? And just trying different ways and all that, you know, where this week, you know, we're marking zone, you know, next week we're man to man. It's just like, we were 5, you know, 4-4-2, we're 3-4-3-3, you know. It's like every other week it was something different, you know, and every other week it was a starting lineup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, you know, it wasn't as much consistency within the team.
And so you guys didn't have any rhythm.
Yeah, just no rhythm. We didn't start playing well until September. And by then, I think we were out of the playoffs.
Yeah. You know?
So it's like, what? And again, just to understand system, understand players, and to know what we're getting, you know, from Oscar. And it just, I think, as his first year coach, or first year coaching the MLS team, you know, so it was a growing pains for him as well for us. I think we were a little bit frustrated with each other and trying to understand his system of play. But again, it would change every so often, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from coming from a Gary Smith with a kind of a structure and understand everyone understand their role, to this week, to the next year, where for, you know, until summer, it's like we're trying a new system, trying to figure out who we are, what was the identity of the team.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I felt like we kind of lost our identity that year and didn't really find it or starting to play good soccer until maybe September.
And that's too late.
Yeah, I was way too late.
Well, I think you've got some daddy duty to get to, so I'll let you get to that. Thank you very much for your time, Omar.
It's been since we started.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bren. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Matt. No worries.
The Rapids limped into the playoffs in 2011. Cummings scored the only goal in the play-in round against Columbus Crew. Then Colorado went on to lose 4-0 on aggregate to Kansas City. Head coach Gary Smith was out of contract going into that offseason. Talks broke down, and eventually he wasn't retained. The roster turnover began as Oscar Pareja was hired. As Omar said, 2012 changed completely. The culture just wasn't the same under new management, and the rebuild was very much on, with the Rapids trading many of the veterans who were such a big part of that cup run 2 years prior. In December 2012, Omar was traded to Houston Dynamo for Nathan Sturridge and allocation money. The forward went on to play 1 year in the NASL with San Antonio Scorpions, who are now San Antonio FC. He retired in July 2017 after a year and a half of playing with FC Cincinnati, then playing in the second division USL. He finished his Rapids career tied with Paul Bravo for the second most regular season goals in club history with 39. All competitions, he has 41 goals and 35 assists in 159 games with the Burgundy Boys. 42 goals if we're giving him that one against San Jose. Between 2008 and 2012, he played 35 times for the Jamaican national team. He has 6 goals and 1 assist all-time for the Reggae Boys. The former University of Cincinnati Bearcat men's soccer player now works in the front office at FCC as the Director of Soccer in the Community and Club Ambassador. He's making a difference in the community that helped shape him as an immigrant in America, and he's enjoying being a dad. With Nashville SC playing in the Eastern Conference now, he sees Kosuke Kimura once or twice a year when the teams play each other. As far as I know, they haven't gone fishing again to try and catch another bass. Next time on Memories from Toronto, we speak to one of the front office architects of the team, Technical Director and Vice President Paul Bravo. Many Rapids fans have heard the rumors about him and Gary Smith not getting along. But what's the real story there? Does Bravo deserve more credit than he gets? And what was with all the fallout after 2011? Does Paul look back at his time at the club fondly, and is he at peace with the Colorado Rapids? His story isn't black and white, it's many shades of burgundy. That's next time on Memories from Toronto, a Holding the Highline production.